You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my co-host and lovely mother, Caroline Kilborn.
We have Thomas Gates.
Well, tell us a little bit about Thomas.
Okay, Thomas Gates is a contributing author of Thank God I, Book 2. Book 1 was a bestseller. Many years ago, when Thomas was 22, he had an extensive near-death experience. As a result, he now inspires and empowers audiences with his presentations, workshops, training programs, and consultations, as he shares the unique healing gifts and insights that came from his remarkable near-death journey. In his workshops, he gives simple yet powerful techniques to enjoy greater physical, emotional, and spiritual well-being, and teaches a self-treatment healing method. So he's going to talk about transcending fear and discovering the eternal nature of how our own being and how to apply the insights from this so that we can live fully now and enliven our natural healing processes. And that's extremely important.
So we have a lot to talk about today.
Yes, we do.
Welcome to Writer's Voices, Thomas.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Now, it's still hard for me to get used to calling you Thomas after knowing you for many, many years as TJ.
Yeah. I've had many names over the years. If you run into somebody from Texas and they're in Fairfield and you say Thomas Gates, they go, Thomas Gates. Oh, you mean TJ. Mm-hmm. Or in Deep South, they'll say Tommy Joe.
Oh, so you started out as Tommy Joe and then became TJ and Thomas. And you know, I heard Lynn refer to you as Tommy a little bit ago.
Mm.
So,
yeah, right.
So
I answered
full
all of
circle. Well, Thomas, tell us a little bit about what your life was like before your near-death experience.
Well, you know, I grew up out in the country, and I got to spend a lot of time living in the woods, basically. We had family rules, and you could go outside not before the sun came up, and you had to come home for meals and make sure you did your chores and your homework. And I played drums, too, so practiced that, and then back outside. But I had to be back in before dark. So I really maximized my experience of living in the woods.
Do you think a lot of, you know, people our age grew up that way where we were, you know, we sort of left the house in the morning in the summertime, showed up for meals and came home at night. And our parents didn't know where we were most of the time.
Mm.
And nowadays, it doesn't seem like kids get to live that way anymore.
No, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, it's very different. I mean, you know, living in the country, life was fairly simple, even though I went to school in the city. I actually went to Catholic school. And one of the things that was going on for me was being in the woods so much, I got to observe what was happening in nature and all around me. And I would see, you know, how the seasons would come and pass. And the animals, how they behaved, and just like silently witnessing all that. And so I got an early experience of some recognition that there's something underlying all this that allows it to happen. There has to be some intelligence. But of course, I was a little child, so you know, it's not something that I could even formulate in words or say, and didn't even think it was necessary. But I ran into a problem as I was getting this education from the Catholic school. Not that I have anything against Catholicism, but I didn't see it matching up, what they were teaching me and what I was observing in nature. So we were sort of at odds for a little while.
But then something happened that changed your life.
Yeah. Major.
Major. And I think you're going to read the selection from this book later that we'll get into more detail about that, about what happened. So let's talk a little bit about the Thank God I books. This Thank God I, Stories of Inspiration for Every Situation. And this came, when was this book published, this book one?
That one came out actually less than a year ago, I think.
Wow. And who was the kind of guiding force behind this?
Oh, this wild man named John Castagnini from New York. I met him in California, out in Malibu. There was a conference over at Pepperdine University, and he was there. He was not in the conference, but I just ran into him out on the sidewalk. He happened to be there somewhere, and he started to tell me about this book idea that he had. And so we were just talking, and because of the nature of the book, I told him that, you know, I may have a story that you might like for that book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't hear anything from him for a while. We exchanged information, and I kind of forgot about it. And then one day I got connected with them. Someone called me and asked if I wanted to pursue that, and so we did.
Now, some of the stories in this book are things like, thank God my wife cheated, thank God I had cancer, thank God my son died, thank God my husband was an alcoholic. So the perspective is to look at things that some people might see as tragedies and find the reason to be grateful for those
right.
events in your life.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, like when you look at the titles on there, I mean, you know, they're not the most savory sounding experiences one can have in life.
No.
But they are part of life. And I think of this book as chicken soup on steroids.
Good way.
Because these are really not for the faint-hearted. They're real life, you know, getting into life experiences mm-hmm. that people have. And so his idea, John's idea of this book was to just collect a lot of stories from people who have had these experiences and show, yes, that it was a difficult experience that you wouldn't want to wish on anyone else, but they came through, how people come through those things and finally come to a sense of gratitude for having had the experience, which when you first look at it, you look at those titles and you say, how could you possibly be glad that that happened to you?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So how did you find all these people that had all these experiences that wanted to tell about them?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how he gathered everybody up, but there sure were a lot of people. He did start a website. Is one thing that he did. And so people could form like a community, and so they could send in stories.
Uh-huh.
And then if they sounded like stories that would work for the book, then he could contact the people. So
now in this book one, there is a story by, you talk about chicken soup, one of the Fairfield's chicken soup authors, Janet Atwood.
Oh, yeah.
And
great story.
And co-author of The Passion Test. In fact, she was a guest on our show mm-hmm. about a year a half ago, maybe,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
On the passion. We're talking about the passion test. So how did she get involved? Do you know, did she connect with this guy through you, or was it just coincidence that we have two Fairfield people?
Actually, we have more than that.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know how she connected with it. I just found out that she was in it, and I thought, well, that's great. You know, we have the Fairfield representation.
Yeah.
John Kramer has a story in that book, too.
Oh, he does. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. And which one's... Now, Janet's is Thank God for Every Moment in My Life.
Yeah.
And what was
If John's? You know Janet...
Thank God I Got Diabetes.
That's John Kramer's.
Wow.
Yeah. But if you know Janet, but you don't really know about some of her life prior to, you know, meditating and all that, it's quite a fascinating story.
You'll see the other side.
Yeah.
The other side of Janet. Now, so this was book one. So you weren't involved with this book, but now book two is where your story
right.
is, right?
And also, who do we have? Deborah Poneman.
Is in book two?
She's in book two. And Mary Foster.
Okay.
Wife of George Foster, who designed the covers.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So this is...
7 degrees, you know.
Absolutely. Wow. So why don't you... Do you want to read us your
yeah,
story
sure.
that's going to be in Thank God I, Book 2, coming
mm-hmm.
out in June?
Mm-hmm.
This is Thomas Gates.
Oh. Did I forget that?
Your glasses?
Yeah, that's okay. I you got good light here in this little studio here.
Yeah.
So I'll just read this for a little bit. Growing up in Central Texas, I had the good fortune to spend long periods of time playing alone and wandering about the woods and hillsides, observing how everything in nature seemed to effortlessly flow with a natural rhythm and grace. Although I didn't realize it at the time, Mother Nature was teaching me through simple observation and silence great lessons of life that would later serve me in a most powerful way. Without really giving it any thought, I knew that there must be an underlying source or intelligence that supported everything happening around me. In 1970, at the age of 20, I left my country home and moved to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I worked as a professional musician, playing drums in concert and dance halls, nightclubs and bars. I soon found myself surrounded by people who obviously had a very different take on life. parts of the city were plagued by drug and gang-related crimes, with a growing sense of heightened racial tension. I often witnessed sudden outbreaks of violence at some of the venues where I perform. One night, in particular, a gang fight erupted outside our club and people began to fight inside. Chairs were flying, glass was breaking, and a young woman lay on the floor suffering from a knife wound. The chaos turned into a full-blown riot, and outside in the parking lot, a police officer was shot and killed. After this tragic event, the stress and strain of living in such an environment took its toll. My health suffered, I became increasingly depressed, and I felt isolated from my friends. It was difficult to relate to this whole scene anymore, and I longed for the peace and silence I had known in my childhood. I spent the next 2 years searching for some sort of answer. Not finding it, I sank further into hopelessness. After the steady urging of my sister Barbara, I learned a meditation technique.
Wonder which one that was.
I can't imagine. That she'd practiced for a couple of years. Immediately, I experienced an incredible deep silence. I was thrilled that this could be the key to help me reclaim what I had lost. Even so, nothing could have prepared me for the intense experience I was about to go through. Just 1 week after learning to meditate, while visiting my parents, I collapsed in pain. I was rushed to the hospital, where doctors quickly diagnosed a severe case of appendicitis. As they prepared me for surgery, I recall a doctor saying, "Don't worry, it's just a routine surgical procedure. You'll be home in about 3 days if all goes well." It did not go well. Those 3 days turned into a month-long struggle for my life. The surgery turned out to be more complex. Doctors discovered a large tumor in my colon that had to be removed immediately. This would ultimately lead to major infection throughout my body. When I regained consciousness after the surgery, the pain was unbearable, and the doctors kept me heavily sedated for several days. When my body temperature soared to 107 degrees, I heard the doctors announce to my father, "I'm sorry, we've done all we can. We're not sure he's going to make it." Within moments after hearing those words, I witnessed the process of emptying out of my body and looked down from someplace just above. At first, I didn't recognize it, and then realized that body was me. Or was it? How could that be me when I'm up here looking down at that tiny empty shell? In that moment, I realized that nobody really dies. Nobody gets out of here dead. The view of my body gradually faded away, and I found myself expanding like molecules of air, filling up a vast empty space that unfolded before me. I was released from all attachment to the life I had known before. From that point onward, I had no past and no future. There was only the present, moment by moment. I moved through an expansive tunnel, and a brilliant golden light appeared in the distance. The magnetic quality of the light gently drew me towards it until finally I entered into it. This exquisite light had a pure healing essence and warmth that completely absorbed me. I felt a sense of timelessness as I became one with the light. I eventually moved beyond the light into a seamless continuum of deepening silence. Finally, I crossed over an invisible threshold into nothingness, beyond time and space. There was nothing to know, nothing to do, and nothing to be. No thought, only the potential for everything. Yet, it was unmanifest in its infinite silence. It was the pure, unmanifest source of all creation. The next thing I knew, I crossed back over the same invisible threshold, heading back in the direction from whence I had just come. It was only then that I recognized source for what it was, the eternal source of my existence. I experienced my own consciousness as inseparable from absolutely everything in creation. I had no need, no desire, and not a single trace of fear. All was one and all was well. Perfection. Little did I know that I would soon be returning to the world and the body I had left behind. Then, as I had the sensation of moving faster and faster, I was reaching an intense rate of speed. I was suddenly slammed back into my body. I opened my eyes and looked around, but I had no memory of ever having been in this body before, and no memory of the world around me. I didn't know who I was, where I was, or even what I was. But that didn't matter. I had the memory of the incredible journey I had just taken and the truth of my own eternal existence. The slate was clear. One life had ended and a new one had begun.
Do you think if you hadn't heard the doctor say that, you think you would have given over?
Good question. And the funny thing about that, when they walked in and said that, my first thought was, how rude.
They've given up on me.
Well, right. I mean, they walked into the room, and my father's sitting over in the room in a chair, very concerned, of course, and they walked in and said that to him, not to me. Well, see, I could hear. I heard that. But, of course, later I realized I was unconscious to them. I was just laying over there in the bed. They didn't think that I was good. I wasn't going to respond. I couldn't respond. But I thought, this is ridiculous. This is absurd, most absurd thing I'd ever heard in my life. I'm too young to die, for one thing. They must be in the wrong room. I don't know.
Because I think sometimes our bodies give us over to death gradually. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, I think that happens.
And that, you hear a lot of stories about older people in particular who basically don't die until someone close to them allows them. Mm-hmm. You know, says it's okay to go.
There's so many ways, and everyone that this experience, like the experience I had, is that was my experience. Your experience when that time comes could be totally different, and probably will. There may be some similarities because there often are. But what I discovered in that is, you know how in this life right now, where we are right here, sitting here, that we create the reality of our lives here. Mm-hmm. I discovered that as we leave it, this life that we know, and make that transition, we're still creating reality.
Well, if I go to New York City, I'm going to have a different experience than if you go to New York City.
Sure.
We both went to the same place, so why would it be any different?
Exactly.
When we die?
Yeah, everybody gets the idea that everything is going to be this way, and they're basing that on the way they think right now. But when you don't have a body, the physiology of experience changes.
When you
don't have physiology, you don't need to experience, and you can't experience the same way you do here. It's not. How could we expect that? So everything changes, and especially time and space. I found out that there is no time and there is no space either.
Now, what do you think made you come back?
Well, I get asked that a lot. There was no one who ever spoke up to me and said, sorry, it's not your time. You can't stay here. You have to go back. And, you know, people hear that.
Because we have heard stories about
that. Yeah, they hear
that
and go, darn, oh, heck. no one ever said that to me. In fact, no one ever said anything to me. I did meet some beings in the beginning of the journey who just reassured me and told me I was loved and that they were there to help me and everything's all right. And that was nice. But after that, there was no sound even, not even the sound of silence, but a beautiful silence.
Were those individuals people that you knew from your past?
No, they weren't. They were just five beings who appeared and didn't recognize them at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tell that story, little kids here, they say, oh, those were angels. And I said, well, they didn't have any wings. I didn't notice that, but, you know.
But they probably were angels.
Yeah, and I found out later that, you know, angels don't really
have wings,
as far as I can tell. I see them, you know.
Well, that's our own depiction of them with wings. You know, doesn't mean they have them.
It's a kind of metaphor of what they might represent.
Right, mm-hmm. The freedom of flight.
Yeah.
There's a great picture. These two angels are flying through the air, and there's the three crosses on the hill in the distance, and they're. You know, they're looking forward, looking to that. And it's a great picture.
Yeah.
Love it.
So you came back, you said, and it sounds like you said you didn't have a memory of being in this body. Did you recover your memories at
some
point?
Yeah, that was quite interesting at first, you know, because when I got back, I didn't recognize anything. I saw the wall. First thing is I saw the ceiling, and it was one of those, acoustic tile ceiling.
Right.
Now this was 35, almost 40 years ago, I think, when this happened. And the odd thing about it is that I go into buildings and I look up and I see that same style sometimes, the sculpted thing, you know?
Uh-huh,
and it,
mm-hmm.
I just get a laugh every time I look at it. But, yeah, when I first got back in the body, it was like my head flew back and my eyes popped open, and that's what I saw, and I had no idea what it was. And then I saw the wall, and then I saw some equipment. Of course, I didn't know that's what it was. And I saw my father over in the chair, and I saw my hand move, and I realized, oh, I'm in this. But what is this? I didn't remember that. And then I heard myself speak, and I didn't know how I knew how to do that, but I knew what I said. And so it was all very fascinating. And my father said, don't you remember, son, you were really sick, and we thought we were going to lose you there for a while. I didn't know him. I still didn't recognize him, but I knew what he meant when he said, son. I knew that he was my father. But I didn't tell anyone that I don't remember you or anything like that. I was pretty quiet.
Mm. And how long a time are we talking about here? That you
of not having memory?
No, of being gone.
No one knows for certain. Because this was a little country hospital almost 40 years ago. And they
didn't have clocks.
Well, they weren't super. Yeah, right. Yeah, they had sundials, I think.
Well, they didn't have all that fancy equipment.
You know, they just walked into the room and said that. And I don't think they thought that I was going to leave right then on the spot.
Right.
But it looked pretty imminent, you know. So they left my father with that thought in me. And then after I thought, oh, no way. Then within a matter of moments, it started right then. And it was quite an experience. One thing that was a great relief was when it started, all the pain, immense pain that I had been in, stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And so that got my attention. And I've had these sensations in my feet there, and it just kept moving up. I could see in my legs and all this hollow looking. But then it got to my chest, and that's when I realized, oh, I think I am dying, I guess. So at that point, you can either be afraid and fight it, or you can let go. And I let go because I thought the alternative would be go back to that pain, and I wasn't interested in it. I was done with that.
Mm.
And then it finally, you know, came out the top of my head, and I popped out, and that's when I saw my body.
So do you, from that point to when you came back and opened your eyes, was it a matter of minutes or hours?
It could have been moments, very few minutes.
Okay.
I think, because they weren't trying to resuscitate me. And back then, I don't even know if people knew what a living will was, and I didn't have one for sure. If they had, I might have been upset with them later.
Yeah.
So then with the memory thing, how long did it take you to get your memory back?
It probably took a few days before memory started coming back. And I was in the hospital for a month recovering. So all I knew was my world was that hospital room mm-hmm. for a while until I left. But I finally remembered who my father was and later my mother. And then there began to be other memories that came back. And once they started coming back fairly quickly. But here's the thing about memory for me. And I understand this now about physiology because of all the work that I do with people and helping them in different ways with their health and emotional well-being is that the time, I just thought, like, had a gap there. Totally. You have to ask me that question again.
We're talking about recovering your memory.
Yeah. So gradually it did come back. But see, I'm not very interested in the past, obviously. Because what I discovered in my journey and in that experience is that there really is only one time, and that is right now. It's the present moment. And so I find the present time to be the most charming and the most, it draws me. That's where I like being. So I can remember past things as is needed, but I'm not really that interested in that. Even sometimes the future, you know. That's not good when you're trying to market books and things.
Well, the thing about, you know, maybe past events are not that interesting, but if you don't remember people and relationships, it's kind of hard to. It's like that movie 50 First Dates, where the woman has amnesia and she never remembers. So it's hard to build a for her boyfriend to build a relationship because she doesn't remember what happened the last time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Well, that didn't last that long for me. I mean, it was fine. But what I discovered was that, you know, I knew that I was different. Mm-hmm. I looked the same, and I had a sense of humor, and, you know, I spoke the way I did and all that. But I was different, and I was never going to be the same. But people want you to be, and
oh,
they're not
sure.
comfortable sometimes with that kind of change.
Now, did you talk about your experience right away?
No, you know, I didn't think to do it. It was 5 years before I told anyone about it.
Really? Anyone?
Yeah. I didn't even tell my father, who was there with me the whole time.
Wow.
And the reason is that I just didn't think that was important. All it was my experience. I didn't know. See, when this happened, there were no books about near-death experience. So I had no reference to say, oh, yeah, that's what I had.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about it is that, you know, you're talking about something that is almost beyond description.
Right.
Yeah.
And so then I really didn't have the words anyway. But when I finally did share the story with someone, there was something that happened. They had a sort of a transformational type experience. Very moving. And so next time I'd share the story, somebody, you know, same thing. I noticed that there was some value in sharing the story. So I began to do that.